We started last week on a section that I wanted to cover in dealing with relationships, in dealing with conflict resolution, specifically with the cards that you build out. The very first night that we had the very first lesson, I passed everybody out cards, and there were three questions on those, and we'll get to those questions. So we're going to continue on with that tonight. Before our introduction that we've done every night, our text verse, 2 Corinthians 5:18, "And all things are of God, who hath reconciled us to himself by Jesus Christ, and hath given to us the ministry of reconciliation. To wit, that God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself, not imputing their trespasses unto them, and hath committed unto us the word of reconciliation." So one of the things in dealing with this is that all relationships are broken, but through Jesus Christ we can have reconciled, fixed, healed relationships. And we're looking at some verses that help us in that, and the one that we're looking at in dealing with the cards. But if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another. And I shared this with you last week in dealing with the bite and devour. It literally means to gnaw on one another. I've never seen anybody have somebody else's leg bone in their mouth chewing on it. You kind of get that image. But sometimes the way in which we talk to one another, the way in which we bicker, and the way in which we are after one another, it's kind of like, you know, somebody, it's as annoying as if somebody was literally gnawing on your flesh. And so take heed that you be not consumed one another. Maybe not physically, but definitely emotionally, and just destroy the relationship by the kinds of things we do and by the kinds of things that we say. The three questions that we dealt with that were on the card is, what do you fight about? Is there a topic that causes reoccurring arguments in a relationship? What question or subject would you like answered or addressed during this series of lessons? Some of these things we have addressed in some of the lessons, and there are some things we haven't. One of the things that I thought was really interesting is some of the answers were the same. For example, what do you fight about? And is there a topic that causes reoccurring arguments in the relationship? Many of those were the same answer. You know, for example, one person put money. What do you fight about? What would you like? What topic causes arguments? Money. And the third one was, what question or subject would you like answered or addressed during the series? Money. So some of those were the same kind of answer. Some of them were a little bit different. Well, one of the things that I found in addressing this, that some of the things that you wrote were personal, some of the things were wonderful questions, and instead of reading those, we're a kind of small group. You know, I hate to do that, and I kind of gave you the idea that I would keep those private. One of the things I found is that there were reoccurring subjects that came up. One of the things that shocked me, the word is surprised, not shocked. One of the things that surprised me a little bit was the things that we put on our card was the same things that I have seen over and over again on many surveys. That was the three top issues in relationships. Somebody know what those are? We dealt with them last week. Do you remember? Greg, what are the three top things?
Greg knows one.
Greg knows one.
What?
In-laws. You're right.
That isn't what you gave last week.
In-laws. In-laws is one of them.
Money.
And the one we won't ever talk about.
Sex.
Yeah, that's it. Intimacy. In fine print, it's there. So money, intimacy, in-laws. Those are the three things that in relationships, and especially in marriage. Now, I realize that the cards, as they were filled out, we're all in direct relationship to marriage. And we're not going to talk just in context of marriage either. Most of the things in dealing with the Word of God that work in one relationship will work in any relationship. Broken relationships are the same, and the healing process through Jesus Christ is the same. But we are going to address these. Last week we talked about money. We did these verses last week. I just didn't change my slide, so we're going to go through those. Okay, we're going to talk about this. Now, this is not an easy topic for me to talk about, so I'm not going to use the word sex that often, okay? I'm going to turn 50 shades of red. You may be okay with that, but I'm not. So the word I'm going to use is intimacy. The other thing that's kind of interesting is the Bible actually has a lot to say on the subject. You read the book of the Song of Solomon, you want to talk about blushing, it will make you blush. The problem is that sometimes, because we have mixed audience, mixed congregation, oftentimes we have young children, it's a topic that we sometimes shy away from. Now, I'm just going to kind of just give you a little bit of some things here. I'm not going to go into to great detail, and I think you can understand why, but I do want to touch on it because it is an issue. It is what God has intended for marriage. That is the vehicle by which the proper place for intimacy is in marriage. The world doesn't get that. And that's one of the things that is wrong with relationships in the world, is we don't want to do it God's way. We think we can do relationships our own way, and they're in a mess, and they don't ever get better because we don't understand God's plan. God does have a plan for all relationships. God has a plan for husbands and wives. God has a plan for parents and children. God has a plan for friends. All relationships can be healed in good relationships through God. Some verses in dealing with intimacy. Marriage is honorable in all. And the marriage bed is honorable. The marriage bed is undefiled. So intimacy should exist in marriage. That's where it is honorable. Outside of that, it is not honorable, and it is defiled. It is sinful. So that's an important verse. 1 Corinthians 7, 3 through 5. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power over her own body, but the husband. Likewise also the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your inconsistency. So this is a practical group of verses that's talking about rendering due benevolence, what is due, what is your partner's rightful source of intimacy. One of the things that in counseling that I often have done in dealing with this issue is I've asked this question for couples. And I kind of wish I'd given you pencil and paper, but I didn't. But if you're here and married, you can do this exercise. Over the last 3 months, what would you list as your frequency per week? Now, husbands and wives would write a number down. So you can think of a number, and you might later share with your spouse what number you come up with. One of the things that's very interesting about that is that the wife almost always puts a larger number than the husband does. Not always, but almost always. I've seen it many, many, many times that way. It's kind of interesting that the way in which we view it. The other thing that I want to say about intimacy is that men and women are different. Anybody ever notice that? Okay. Not telling you anything too new, right? The way in which we approach everything is different. The way in which we approach intimacy is different. For men, oftentimes, And again, these things aren't always 100%. But for men, oftentimes, it shows that the relationship is going well. That is their way of to express the relationship going well. For women, the relationship needs to be going well before the act of intimacy. You see the difference? And so what we communicate by intimacy is often different. Our goal and to get there is often different. Now, I don't normally do this. I don't know. I can't think of a time I've ever done this. I'm going to recommend two books. There's a reason I'm going to do this. One is, it's difficult in this kind of a setting to talk about this topic. I'm happy to do that, and if you have a question, I'll answer it to the best of my ability. The Bible has a lot to say about it, and it is a very important subject. Intimacy is a barometer of how the relationship is working. Think about that. Intimacy is a barometer for how well the relationship is working. If there's difficulty in intimacy, there's probably difficulty in the relationship. Now, it could be a direct result of intimacy itself, but this often is a reflection of other issues in the relationship. Does that make sense? And so one of the things I'm going to do is recommend two books. And the reason I'm going to do that is, one, that the world's view of sex, of intimacy, has nothing to do with God's view of it. And there is all kinds of information out there about sex. And that's not intimacy. Okay? And most of it we would call pornography. We should not be getting our education and bringing that kind of stuff into our marriage. That is not going to be helpful for our marriage. There is good Christian information out there. The Bible's a wonderful source, but sometimes we need something very, very practical, and it's very difficult to talk about it in this setting. So there are others that are good. Now, I have these in my library. If you would like to borrow them, there's two I'm going to recommend that I think are excellent, written from a Christian standpoint. One is Intended for Pleasure, written by a medical doctor. Excellent book. I would recommend this for any married couple. Any questions you might have in dealing with a godly perspective, they cover this in a wonderful way. Things that different areas in our life, different periods in our life, and different issues that come up in dealing with intimacy, they address this very well. The other book is also very good and very practical. It's simply called The Gift of Sex. And both of these are excellent material. There's others, but if you're looking for one or two, these are the two that I would recommend. Okay. I don't have a blank slide to go to, so I'm going to go here. So if you want those titles, I can get them for you. If you'd like to borrow one, I could get those for you too. But those are the ones that I would recommend. You have any questions about intimacy?
One of the issues that you mentioned, talk to people about a lot in the marriage, that it's one of the last ones they're willing to talk about. And I think the principle of saying nothing else is that we don't have to just suffer in a bad relationship this way.
And you're absolutely right. As people look for help in their relationship, there's other things that are easier to talk about, and this one's often a little bit harder to talk about. And so I know that it's going to be difficult in this setting to talk about. If people, just myself or Joyce and I with a couple, if it's difficult in that setting, you could imagine in this kind of setting to just blurt out those kind of, it feels very intimate, and so those kinds of things we tend not to feel comfortable discussing. So that's one reason I wanted to share with you the books that might give some insight, some helpful insight. Anyone else have a comment? A thought?
Yes.
Functioning as it should, it takes it. Settles or some other issues kind of melt away. All of a sudden, what was really important over here now isn't so important. If that relationship is going as it should,
you are absolutely right. You know, it is a barometer. I mean, it.
If that area is working, you can't have major areas of fighting and bickering to have that kind of intimacy. And there are so many. You're absolutely, absolutely right. And Joyce makes a wonderful point, is that it doesn't have to be that way. Oftentimes the husband and the wife, as you discuss it, and you may have in the past discussed it, and not be able to come to some kind of an arrangement or agreement in dealing with this area. But the issue is there's help. And the first thing I'd recommend is these two books. They're very practical, very wonderful. I'd be happy to sit down and talk to you if that would be helpful too. But there is help, and it doesn't have to be that way. Comments? Any comments? Do I look as uncomfortable as you all look with this topic? I won't torture you any longer if you don't have any other comments.
Well, I do have one comment on this area, because we as Christians it has a feeling of being taboo and being personal, because we don't address it. A lot of Christian settings that people find their information elsewhere and get the wrong picture.
In an ungodly setting, you are... And that's one of the things. That's one reason I was willing to show these two books, even with their titles, that, you know, you're absolutely right. And the problem is as a result of doing that, one, to go get that worldly information, because most of it is pornography, that in itself becomes a sin. That becomes causing others to sin, participating in other sins, causes our mate to sin, and... there is Christian information out there that is practical. And you are absolutely right. Absolutely right.
And I think that embarrassment goes without saying that in this type of setting there is some embarrassment about it. But I also think that something as a whole that the church should be willing to deal with are these sorts of issues, whether it's holding separate classes for men and women and addressing them separately or whatever, but we shouldn't perceive it as a taboo topic, because there is no other place for it.
And it's not taboo, and it's not embarrassing except for the setting, and we tend to be shy about the topic. It's definitely not sinful in the setting that God has intended it. But it is a private topic, and that's what makes it... And it should be private, so we don't want to take and abuse it and, you know, make it too... blunt either. So there is that line that I hope we can walk, and that was one reason I thought maybe by making some recommendations we could do that. Comments?
Your point, it is a private topic and it should be kept that way, and honoring the trust of your mate in this area is important, but there's also a great benefit often for inviting a friend to your marriage, into your marriage, your pastor or someone who can help and talk in these areas, because you don't have to suffer in these areas. And it is amazing the number of Christian marriages that do suffer in this area. A lot.
And because it's something we don't want to talk about, we don't reveal that about ourselves or our relationships. Any other comments? Okay. Something we shouldn't have a problem talking about, in-laws. So the top three, money, intimacy, and in-laws. Not those top three, those three, not in any specific order. Every list I've ever seen There are almost always, those are the top three. There are others that sometimes fall in those, and one of these might fall out to the top five. But they're always very, very high. In dealing with in-laws, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. This issue of leaving and cleaving, is a tough issue. Oftentimes we as adults, old adults, can struggle with this leaving and cleaving. One of the things that's interesting is the issue doesn't just fall upon the child. Now, one of the things that I want you to notice here is that this verse speaks to the man. We as men should be willing to cleave unto our wives. But I have also seen wives who struggle with leaving mom and dad. This isn't a man thing. This isn't a woman thing. This is being able to separate from our parents, and our parents can play a part here. They can make it easier, they can make it harder, but even if our parents make it difficult, it doesn't make it okay. If it takes offending our parents over this, our marriage is that important. And a marriage will not work with more than two people. It will not work with mom and dad dictating to either party. It just won't work. And so we have that responsibility to leaving and cleaving. There's ways in which we can leave and cleave. There's emotional leaving and cleaving. We understand what that would look like. Every time there's a problem, running to mom and dad to fix, my wife said this, and getting them to cure all of our ills when we're now adults and we should be able to take care of ourselves emotionally. And we must start relying upon our mate emotionally. So there is that separation emotionally. There is leaving and cleaving financially. Standing on our own two feet financially. We as parents also can contribute to this. Emotionally, when they come to us for help, one of the best things we can do is, maybe you ought to go talk to your wife, to your husband, to, maybe this is one of those times you need to seek out some other person to answer that question for you. One of the problems is we as parents often like this. We like the sense of connection that it gives us. It's hard. I never understood it. People talking about their adult kids, talking about they never grow up and that kind of thing. It's like, they're adults. And at the time, I was looking at it from, either a child, being the child or being the teenager. And it's like, I have no problem separating from my parents. What's their problem? But now that I'm the parent, I can tell you, your kids are always your kids. You want what is always best for them. And it's easy for us to want to be able to fix their problems when they are, my kids are what, 23 and 25, 24 and 26, I don't know. No, but when they're that old, it would be real easy for me to want to fix their problems as if they were five. Now, they don't like that. Okay, so they want to leave and cleave, and I want that for them, and so I don't do that. But boy, it would be real easy for me to make some huge mistakes in that area, and I understand better. But they're always your kids, and like you said, your kids are adults and a lot older than that. I'm 40. I don't know how old I am. I'm 46. And my parents, if I start sharing, what's that?
You're still.
I am. I'm their little boy. And if I start sharing things about my life, they will real quickly start offering me advice. So for me, leaving and cleaving with my parents is there are certain things, if I don't want their advice, I don't tell them, And so that's one of those issues. It is an issue for us as children to make that. So leaving and cleaving, there's the financial leaving, there's the emotional leaving, there's spiritual leaving. one of the things, our job as parents, is to teach our children about God. I heard it put this way once. Our responsibility as our kids are growing up, they have to depend upon us for everything. When our children are little, if we didn't feed them, they'd starve to death, wouldn't they? They are totally dependent upon us. They're plugged in dependency. Their dependency totally is plugged into us. One of our jobs as parents is to plug their dependency into God, so they stop depending on us and can start depending on God. Does that make sense? And so one of the areas that there's leaving and cleaving is spiritually. We've talked about this before. Owning it. Our kids need to own it. You know, they don't need to come to church because their parents come to church. They don't need to believe in God because their parents believe in God. At some point, it needs to become theirs. Many kids struggle with that, making it their own. But that is so very important. I had a thought I wanted to share, and I totally lost it. Any thoughts? So leaving and cleaving. Mark 10:6-8. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then, they are no more twine, but one flesh. Ephesians 5:31. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Now, one of the things that's interesting is this principle is so important. It is stated in the Old Testament, the very first book of the Bible. It's stated in the Gospels. It's stated in the New Testament epistles, the exact same principle. Now, you might say, well, my parents won't let me. It is your responsibility. This is the thought I wanted to make. If you're having problems with in-laws, this is something I have learned in our relationship, and I've also learned it by seeing it work and applied in other people's relationships. That whoever's in-laws you're having trouble with, the child of those parents must deal with the problem. Because what's going to happen is, if Joyce is having problems with my parents, and I say, you deal with it, my parents are going to feel like they're empowered to deal with her however they want. The key is they want a relationship with me, and they have to know that having a relationship with me comes with having a relationship with her. That's the problem that many parents struggle with. So if I would go to my parents and say, these are the rules, I must deal with that. Okay? Now, there is one exception to the rule. One exception. If there is problems, first of all, whoever it is, if I have a difficulty with Joyce's family, then she has a responsibility to see that it is resolved, that the rules are laid down in issues of leaving and cleaving. Okay? Does that make sense, what we're talking about? The exception to the rule is this. It is easy that as you go on and the rules are set, and the issue is no longer leaving and cleaving, that what can happen is everybody deals with their relationship through the mediator of the child of the parents. Does that make sense what I just said? Here is the circumstances. Some of you are looking at me like you're talking gibberish. For me to have a relationship with Joyce's parents, or Joyce's mom, have a relationship with her dad, he's passed on, so we won't do that right now, but someday I'll have a relationship with him. But if, for me to have a relationship with her mom, because Joyce knows her so well, and Joyce knows me, it's easy to go to Joyce and say, we ought to do this, we ought to do that, you go tell your mom. And it'd be easy for her mom to go to Joyce and say, well, we ought to do this, we do that. And so we have a relationship through the child of the parent. And what's the problem with that? It puts her in the middle. Okay? That's not a leaving and cleaving issue. That's putting somebody in the middle. And so if Joyce's mom did something that irritated me, instead of going and dealing with her about it, go to Joyce and complain, and then what is she supposed to do about it? She either has to fix it or has to just listen to me complain about it. Is that fair to her? Absolutely not. If I have a problem with them, if I want a good relationship with my in-laws, I need to deal with my in-laws directly. After the leaving and cleaving. Did we get that? After the leaving and cleaving. Okay? But one of the things that happens lots of times is we put that child of the parents, of the in-law side, in the middle. And we make them the mediator. And they get manipulated. And that's where if you're that person, you say, hey, look, you know, are you looking for me to fix it or are you just talking here? That's the first thing I would say. And the second thing is, if you got a problem, you need to deal with them. You need to go to that person. You need to talk to them. It's not fair putting that person, it's going to always keep that relationship in turmoil, stressful for that third party. If you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't know, then you're like kind of like, what is he talking about? But trust me, you have to have a relationship with your in-laws if it's going to work, once the leaving and cleaving is resolved. Does that make sense? Comments? Any questions, comments about in-laws? Got a couple. Sister Betty, and then we'll go.
Sometimes, you know, you have a problem with the in-laws and you complain to your spouse, and it's kind of, then it becomes, you know, it puts them on the spot of, you know, well, you know, I should be on my wife's side, but maybe I'm wrong, you know, or something, or it could just, you know, him wanting to protect me, so then all of a sudden he's upset with his parents. And the issue is not really, you know, the issue was, again, going back to the Matthew passage, it was between me and them, and so I should not be drawing in a third party, you know, even though he's my husband. So it puts him sometimes maybe at odds with Karen's, and it isn't right. You know?
Yeah, either way, he's going to lose, your relationship's going to lose, right. Because if he takes your side and you're being a little bit unfair...
Right.
Then it's going to put tension in a spot, and then you're justified in acting unfairly. But the other thing that I've often seen is, let's say you are justified, and then he defends his parents.
And then
something that should be between you and his parents, you know, and that's something that often is difficult, being willing to say, hey, I need to have a relationship with them, and going in doing that and working out those things and having, instead of always saying, why don't you go tell your mom, why don't you do this, why don't you do that, going and talking to them yourself. Yes, Mary.
That isn't only for in-laws. This can happen with children, a brother and a sister. Well, you know, he did this to me, and then they don't go to one another. They come to you.
Yes.
And you've got to learn, wait a minute now, I didn't do this. No, this isn't what I have to do. It's your, you know. And then sometimes they get mad at you because they say, "Well, wait a minute now. You're our mother or the father. Why can't you help us?" No, it's not my problem. And that's a big issue.
You make a great point in dealing with relationships. Anytime we'll have a triangle relationship, it's not going to work. Somebody in the middle, and it can be a parent, it can be a sibling. And whenever you're that person in the middle, this is the right answer. The principle is the Matthew principle, Matthew 18. This is the right answer. And what was their response when you talked to them about it? They're probably going to say, well, I didn't talk to them, so why are you telling me? Right? I mean, if you're not willing to talk to them about it, how can I help you? What would you like for me to do for you? And those kinds of questions, because the relationship between them has to be between them. That can be siblings. I mean, there's all kinds. Husbands and wives, you know, in-laws, all kinds of things. That if you're in the middle of a relationship, it will never go good. Now, we can mediate short-term to bring people together, but then we got to get out of the middle. We cannot mediate long-term relationships. You will be in the middle. You will be an emotional wreck. You will get used. You will be a pawn. Questions, comments?
Marriage is about boundaries. There's a lot of boundaries in marriage. And a marriage has to have its boundaries. And I think that's where, when you're talking, the child needs to be the one that draws the marriage boundaries for their family, their parents, their siblings, their others. They're the ones that have to say, this is our marriage and I will protect it. This is the parameters of them. And as long as people aren't respecting those boundaries, it is the child's responsibility to see that those are set and enforced. But separate from the marriage boundaries, then, there are the relationship boundaries between the husband and wife and the people outside, and those can look a little different. And as far as when you draw, you want to have relationship with these people yourself, as opposed to just, because that's not a very healthy way to have it either, if you have no dealings at all with your in-laws. And sometimes that's the only answer, if they refuse to accept the boundaries that the child or the parents or whoever it is with the relationship is causing it. As long as that biological connector draws those boundaries, then it comes into play that we must then have boundaries. You go have a relationship with my mom. You two work it out, because you're going to be in each other's lives for a long time. You have to work it out, and you have to have your own boundaries, and I don't have to be a part of that. And there's a difference there. But as long as those marriage boundaries aren't clear, it's hard to draw those other kinds of boundaries. And you have to make sure which kind of issues that you're talking about in the relationship.
And I might say that in dealing with in-laws, I have seen relationships that are really messy.
I have never seen that if the child of the parents will draw the line, that it never get better. It may get ugly for a while because they'll test your resolve. But parents, I've never seen a parent being willing to cut their child off, and they have always been willing to reconcile for the sake of their child. I've never seen it not work. But those are not easy, drawing those boundaries. Sometimes it's easy if you move away, but sometimes, you know, we live close to our parents, and the issue isn't any different. I've seen parents be very, very involved, overly involved in their kid's life, 1,000 miles away. I mean, it's not a distance issue. It is an issue of boundaries and drawing those, and it is a leaving and cleaving issue. Thoughts? We have just a little bit of time. The next thing I want to do is deal with the ten issues. We don't have time to deal with 10 issues. So instead of doing that, there were 4 things that were kind of unique that were on the cards that would give no insight as to who may or may not have. And there really was no way to deal with those in the 10 issues. They didn't fit into the categories. One was little things. Fighting over little things. What do you fight over? Little things. Nothing major, just fighting over everything. How do you deal with that? How do you resolve that? You know, one of the things you have to ask yourself, what is important? Remember early on, one of the things we talked about, some things that will destroy a relationship. One view is everything is a win issue. I have to win. If you make little things an issue of winning and losing, you will always lose. When you win, you lose because your mate's the loser. And they're not going to want to be warm and cozy and all those things with someone who's just defeated them. So what about little things? One of the issues is, the reason little things is a problem is because we allow them to stack up, and it's the straw that broke the camel's back type issue. We're not willing to deal with the big things. And remember, I gave you a way to resolve that. What was that? What was the tool I gave you to resolve those things as they come up? What do we call it? Withholds, right? Withholds. And how do you deal with holds? You sit down and you have two positive and one negative, right? And you share your positive, something that's happened during the week. Oh, you look nice when you were wearing your purple muumuu. I don't know. Okay, maybe that wasn't very positive. But something that was positive, and then a negative, and then a positive. Does that make sense? And one of the problems is with little things is because there's never an outlet to deal with things, everything becomes an issue. And sometimes we have to understand that not everything is important. Sometimes little things are the uniqueness of our mate. And instead of them annoying us, we should learn to appreciate them. We should be thankful for those things. Thoughts? Just some thoughts on little things.
Fighting over little things, you probably could be fighting over the wrong thing. And if there's truly other issues, there's struggles, power control issues going on, and that's just the way it manifests itself, and you're really fighting about something bigger. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not, because two people are different.
Right. Other thoughts? The other one kind of goes a little bit with this. How to avoid the fight when you know it's coming.
Little things or knowing the fight when you know it's coming. I'd share this with you. Sometimes there are unresolved things in a relationship, and you would fight. Joyce and I have fought about the same thing over and over again. And, how do you stop that? How to avoid the fight when you know it's coming? Try something different. If you know it's coming, and if you do A, he'll do B, or if you do A, she'll do B, and then comes C, and don't we know the alphabet? And when we know those fights are coming, we know way ahead of time what's going to happen. We know when I do this, you're going to do that. Try something different. See what happens. If the fight's coming anyway, what's going to happen if you stir the pot a little bit? Yeah, okay. So maybe you don't want to try turning your back, huh? There are all kinds of things you can do. One is, say, you know what? I think we're headed for a fight. How about if we take 10 minutes to cool off? Instead of fighting, let's go on a date. Try something different. Let's go do something fun. You know, it's hard to fight in front of people. Let's invite some friends over. I'm serious. You know, it sounds silly. Try something different. And then your friends come over and you still fight. Well, okay, they have some cheap entertainment. Try something different.
I've heard it likened, the relationships are likened to a dance outfit. And as long as each partner's doing their piece, then you have the same result. But if one person, if only one party is trying to do something different, when you refuse to dance, do the same pattern, it has to change things simply by you choosing to alter your behavior, which is what you can control in a relationship, and you can affect change in the relationship by choosing to not respond in the predicted or the expected or the typical fashion.
Yes.
What's wrong with this, having the same person? We've mentioned this 100 times. It's not going to work. I'm not going to agree with you. You're not going to agree with me. Is that?
I think that's very fair. I mean, why fight when you know that you're not going to agree? So why? And if that's the case, if you're fighting to try to get the other person to agree, that's trying to win. And you never win in a relationship.
The only thing about that is that sometimes you both have to resolve it, though. You both have to.
Or be willing to say this isn't resolvable.
We're never going to agree.
And the issue is, our relationship isn't just one topic. And sometimes we get so focused in on a topic that if I can't get you to agree upon that, that defines our whole relationship. And what we may need to do is say, okay, give me three, and many of you have heard me do this, give me three things you like about our relationship. I would imagine most people can do that. And those three things aren't going to have anything to do with this thing we're fighting about. But sometimes we get so tied in to whatever we're fighting about, we lose focus.
And it becomes a win-win, or not a win-win, it becomes a win-lose situation. Yeah. Thoughts? The last one I want to touch on is the secret to longevity. The secret to longevity. There are some secrets to longevity. They're not secrets. One, God's plan. Serving God together. Having something that's common together. And serving God is, you know, some of these things I've already mentioned. One is pray with one another. Pray for one another. It is hard to fight with the person you just got down on your knees and prayed for. That's hard to do. One of the things that you know, sometimes we don't see as important, but I think that all relationships that are good relationships do this. They may not call it this, but they do it. Have date nights. Relationships must be fun. We pursue our mate when we're dating, courting, whatever word you want, and then we get married, and we go off and we do our own thing, and we expect it to be happy. Would you have married your spouse if they never took you on a date? The answer is probably no. So why do I have to stay married when we don't ever do anything specific for our relationship? Does that make sense?
It's important to have enjoyable experiences in the presence of your mate.
Absolutely.
That is, when we associate that with our mate, and that's true for any relationship. If it's only negative or routine or mundane, the relationship is going to deteriorate. And it is friendships in the same way, doing those pleasurable things together. And it can be so totally different what those pleasurable things are. But the things for one relationship, it might be totally different. But that's what it increases the connection in marriage and any relationship, is doing pleasurable things in their presence. And that's one of the things that draws them together.
The secret to longevity, I think, is three key things. We could throw in others, but these are the three.
And I think if you did these three, I think you'd be amazed at how to change your relationship. One is serve God together. Two, pray for one another. Three, do date nights. Do things specific for your relationship that is fun.
Which shows that as a priority.
Right. And one of the things, I shared this, but this is really important anytime I talk about date night. When we're dating, it becomes the man's responsibility. When you're married, for 50 years, planning dates can wear the guy out, okay? Because what happens is you're trying to please, whoever's doing the planning is trying to please the other one. And it's hard. I can't read Joyce's mind. So when it comes to date night, one of the things that we worked out, and I've shared this with many, many people, and it works well, is you rotate. Weekly works well, monthly, whatever you can do. Dates do not have to be expensive. Go to a park. It has to be enjoyable but not expensive. But 1 week, you plan it. The next week, she plans it. One night, we go bowling, which she wouldn't like to do. And the next week, we go to ballet, which I wouldn't like. The key isn't doing what I want to do. The key is I'm wanting to spend time with her, doing something she enjoys so I can enjoy it, because I know it's important to her. Does that make sense? And next week, I get to torture her. So it goes back and forth. So, yeah, Brother Hunter? Oh, I thought you were going to share. So I thought you had something to say. I'm sorry.
The thing about longevity is, first thing is, you have to expect it. You have to go into it with the commitment that it's going to be there, which is very foreign. A lot of marriages today is, they go into it with the intention that it may or may not work, and if it doesn't make me happy in the first week or two, I'm out of here. And you have to expect it and strive for it the very first thing, or you'll never get there.
Absolutely.
If divorce is an option, you probably will at some point.
I agree with that. You will go through some difficult times. And relationships going through difficult times
is what makes the good times good. So all relationships will have some kind of conflict because we're different. That doesn't mean they should be in constant conflict. Comments before we close? Any thoughts? Okay, we will do, not next week, obviously, unless we want to do it by remote. Joyce and I will be out of town, way out of town, out of the country. So we'll be back the 1st. Yeah, it's the 1st. And there's no reason why we won't go ahead and have a relationship class, and we'll talk about these 10 things in dealing with marriage issues. Comments? Let's all stand.